Good morning, everyone. Here's a takeaway for you. Simple fact, poverty exists.
Poverty rate in 2009 was the highest poverty rate since 1994, but was 8.1 percentage points lower than in 1959, the first year estimates are available.
So what's going on? Is it going up? Is it going down? A statistical riddle. Here's a more complex fact. 1 in 7 Americans are in poverty, one of the richest nations in the world. Why?
And that's the thing. You know, comparing it to past decades when there times were different is one thing, but dealing with the fact that there is so many people living in poverty at this point, that's an issue all on its own.
Well, what are the expectations? What should they be? And that gets you to the most complicated question of all, who are the poor? And why are the poor who end up poor, why do they become poor? What's it all about? Our partner at the New York Times takes the complexity head on in a really big story this morning. At a moment where you may hear a lot about the economy this political season, you're not going to hear anything about the complexity of how the economy delivers poverty to some and not to others, and if the choices people make are responsible in some sense for these outcomes on some level. Joining us now is Mario Small, professor of sociology at the University of Chicago. Good morning, professor.
Good morning.
And we're thrilled to have sociologist William Julius Wilson with us, professor of sociology and social policy at Harvard University. Professor, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Mario, let me begin with you. It's fair to say that this report is a look at both the structural basis of poverty, but also it's a little bit of the history of the sensitivity about attacking the subject from a sort of cultural perspective, would you say?
Yeah, I think that's correct. I think in some senses, the idea of a culture of poverty has been so controversial in the past that people have been a little sensitive and a little bit concerned about anything having to do with culture or cultural ideas when tackling poverty and incapacity. But I think one of the things we're doing is trying to look at culture with a more refined lens and with less of the political baggage and a little bit less of the some of the ideology that characterized looking at culture in the past.
William Julius Wilson, when you ask the question, why and who are poor, do you inevitably get the answer, well, it's their own fault?
Oh, yes. Yeah, you frequently get that kind of response. And one of the reasons is that the dominant American belief system is that people are poor or on welfare because of their own personal shortcomings. And I think that's one of the reasons why invariably you get that kind of response.
But there is a nuanced relationship between choices people make and the outcome in the society that bears studying, but is also very, very sensitive to accurately and fairly report on. How has this been done in the past, and how can you refine that lens that Mario Small was talking about, William Julius Wilson?
Well, what we're now looking at as social scientists more carefully is the effects of living in certain environments. And one of the effects, for example, of living in segregated neighborhoods over extended periods is repeated exposure to cultural traits. And this would include linguistic patterns that emanate from or are the products of racial exclusion, traits such as verbal skills that may impede successful maneuvering in the larger society.
Well, let me ask you, Mario Small, many of the studies, including the original work on Mexican families back in the 1950s, said that sometimes the cycle of poverty is because when you're in a poor situation, you develop survival tactics that don't work, don't correspond to successful tactics. Is that turned out to hold true?
Yeah,
I think sometimes there might be some truth to that, but I think those old models made an important mistake. I think part of the old idea behind the culture of poverty was that even though poverty, and this is from Oscar Lewis and many of the original theorists, even though poverty in their minds resulted from structural conditions, they believed that once people became poor, they had developed such strong survival strategies that even if the original conditions that led to this culture of poverty were to change, people were likely to remain in that condition of cultural poverty. And I don't think that's actually correct. I think research has shown repeatedly that people are remarkably able to change attitudes, change strategies, change perceptions as the structural conditions that surround them change.
But yeah, you're quite correct. But that requires that they choose to do that change. I guess the question is it the case that if you take your survival sort of signals and verbal patterns with you into a successful office, that you're basically signaling to people that you're going to not be a success, William Julius Wilson?
Well, let me just say one thing. Mario Small mentioned Oscar Lewis. You know, Lewis later modified his position by placing more weight on external societal forces than on self-perpetuating cultural traits, you know, to explain the behavior of the poor. But unfortunately, conservative social scientists embellish the idea that poverty is a product of deeply ingrained habits that are unlikely to change following improvement in external conditions. And today, when people talk about poverty, they don't put those kinds of restrictions on the notion of poverty. They feel that if people are exposed to different situations, for example, improved opportunities, their behavior will reflect those changes.
All right, we have plenty of time to talk about this. We're actually going to continue this discussion into the next segment. So to complete the next minute or so, Mario Small, is it possible to talk about the culture of poverty as being capitalism itself, which implies that certain people are going to lose while others win, Mario Small?
I think in general, I mean, the idea that many people would say that it's inevitable that some people are going to lose in the sense that it's inevitable that there's always going to be some unemployment rate, there's always going to be some people in poverty. I think in some respects, it's not quite the right attitude, certainly from a policy perspective, but even from a social scientist perspective. We want to understand how people and why people are making the choices that they're making. We want to understand the role of structural factors. And we want to understand why people differ in their responses even in those circumstances where they're facing the same structural factors.
All right. Mario Small is professor of sociology at the University of Chicago. William Julius Wilson is a professor of sociology and social policy at Harvard University. We're talking about political sensitivity and looking at the structural causes of poverty in America. We're going to continue this discussion. We want you to join us, 877-8-MY-TAKE, and you can post a comment at thetakeaway.org. We already have plenty of them, and we'll share them with you when we come back. Policy and poverty next on The Takeaway. Good morning, everyone. Striding confidently toward a pretty big idea this morning at thetakeaway.org. The real losers, someone writes, are infants born into impoverished families, and that our culture has no real way to help them get a good start. You're going to hear a lot about the economy this election season, very little about the complexity of poverty, and certainly about how difficult it is to address the sociological causes of poverty in any politically coherent way. We've been speaking with Mario Small, professor of sociology at the University of Chicago. William Julius Wilson is also with us, a sociologist and professor at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government. To both of you, professors, and thanks for staying with us, I want to pose a conundrum, all right? William Julius Wilson, you suggested that speech patterns may have something to do with indicators or the likelihood that people might remain in poverty or be unable to get out of poverty. Mario Small, you suggested that capitalist notions of inevitability are a bad way of looking at poverty in the United States. So let's think about politicians. A politician that says African-Americans who are in poverty need to improve their speech patterns, that's going to be a difficult political message. Yet some members say, the conservative movement, Mario Small, have no problem saying people in poverty are losers, give the money to the rich, and let it trickle down. Mario, first, how do we resolve sociology and policy in this election season? And then, Professor Wilson, I'll come to you. Mario Small?
Well, I think the easy answer is by looking at the evidence. So one very prominent conservative idea for many years was the idea that many people who are poor, particularly African-American poor children, remain in that condition because they didn't value education. In other words, they didn't want to go to college, they didn't think education was an important means to success. But it turns out if you look at the evidence, what you find is that overwhelmingly, African-American children and poor children, the poorest children in the poorest housing projects, overwhelmingly want to go to college. In fact, there's no measurable statistical difference on average in the aspirations across races and across different socioeconomic groups after you control for basic factors. At the same time, though, it does not mean that culture does not matter in any way. One of the things we've seen is, think about what it takes to get to college. You and I know that in order to get to college, if you want to enroll in September, you don't apply in July. You apply in October, November, or December of the prior year. That there are scholarships for you if you get in, that you have to write an essay, that you have to take an SAT. This cultural capital is an important cultural variable, but it's not available to all children. So what happens is, when you look at the reasons many of the poorest children are not going to college, yes, you look at cultural conditions, but it's not a question of their values, as many have said in the past. In some respects, it's a question of cultural capital, information about what it takes to get into college. So I think an answer is, yeah, by looking at the evidence. If you look at the evidence, I think you'll get a lot farther at reconciling, as you're saying, sociology and politics.
Access improves outcomes. I think that's a good takeaway there. Professor Wilson, what would you say?
I couldn't agree more with my colleague, Muriel Small. And this reminds me that one thing that didn't come out in this otherwise very good article in the New York Times today on the, quote, culture of poverty, unquote, is that the use of a cultural argument is not without peril. You know, anyone who wishes to understand American society must be aware that explanations that focus on the cultural traits of poor people are likely to draw far more attention from policymakers and the general public than structural explanations will. Why? Simply because it's an unavoidable fact that Americans tend to de-emphasize the structural origins and social significance of poverty and welfare. So I feel that a social scientist has an obligation to try to make sure that the explanatory power of his or her structural argument is not lost to the reader. And that's why I'm very glad that Muriel Small raised those issues.
All right, so let's get this into the political realm. George W. Bush says soft bigotry of low expectations. Is he making a cultural point that needs to be followed on by a significant policy, Professor Wilson?
Yes, he's making a cultural point, but, you know, it's interesting that once you open up the opportunity and improve conditions for people, then expectations rise, and people start thinking about how they can improve themselves to experience social mobility in society.
All right, Mario Small, Barack Obama made that great comment during the campaign and maybe even during the inauguration about that the mom on the street that would whoop everybody who didn't get home and on time and do their homework. He's making a cultural point there, but where's the policy follow-on?
Well, I think that's a fair question. I think in some respects, when Barack Obama was talking about that, he was making the point that a policy can't actually do everything. In other words, he was making the point that in many respects, parents are and continue to be responsible for a lot of what happens to their children. At the same time, though, I think policy can make it a lot easier for parents to do that for their children by providing not only increased access, but increased information. We've been talking earlier about information and the importance of information. It's not all parents who know exactly what it is a child needs to do to get into college. And I think policy could be doing a lot better disseminating that information.
All right, quick,
for everybody who wants it.
Quick answers, gentlemen, before we go. Where are the best interventions from government to change poverty? Is it infant? Is it in the educational sphere? Or is it in the workplace? Mario Small?
I think it's in a combination of all of the above.
Okay, William Julius, a combination, I'll take that as an answer. William Julius Wilson, what would you say?
I agree, a combination of the above.
Two sociologists, two professors, we are so thrilled to have had both of you on the program this morning. Mario Small, professor of sociology at the University of Chicago. William Julius Wilson, sociologist and professor at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government. Join this conversation, 877-8-MY-TAKE. Are you sensitive about the sort of cultural, structural basis for poverty? Is it something politicians should be talking more about? Do you talk about it? Is it a scientific question, or does it border on racism? Post a comment at thetakeaway.org.